As I said, my name is Father Dave Zimmer. I've been in the Diocese of North Dakota for 27 years, so yes, I'm used to the weather by now. But I've been a pastor at St. John the Apostle Church in Minot for the last 13 years. I'm kind of on borrowed time because our bishop doesn't like to leave people in a parish for over 8 to 10 years, he said. And he says, "How long have you been here?" I says, "Well, that was last year." I said, "12 years." Oh. So I'm bracing myself for the big move. Why did I stay so long? Part of it is because of stewardship. Because our parish, like yours, has been doing it for a while. In the name of stewardship, accepting the term stewardship, and being able to talk about it openly and not be afraid of the term. And to use it openly and use it confidently, because we know that it's not about a fundraising tactic. Now, in most of the retreats that I give, I'm usually introducing stewardship to the parishes. So I spend quite a bit of time breaking the myth of stewardship as fundraising. I can understand that. I can understand that. Maybe you can too. Maybe Father Kelly can as well. Because, you know, initially, for 18 years actually, I believed that that's what it was all about. And the evidence was clear to me because I used to have lots of mail on my desk that talked about increased offertory. And it was titled a stewardship program. Those two words shouldn't go together. Stewardship is a way of life. It's not a program. Programs begin, they end, they get suspended, they get abandoned. Stewardship is not something like that. Stewardship is a way of life. Jesus, when he sent out his disciples, he didn't call them together and says, "You know what, I got a program that I want you to try to do. We'll give it 5 years and see how it goes." That's not what he commissioned them to do. He called them to a way of life. And he went out and said, you know, okay, take this and proclaim the good news to all the world. And then let's see what happens. And now we know what happened. No, stewardship, as you well know, is a way of life. And so our parish has been working at this for about 10 years. But let me back up for a minute because... And before we do our opening prayer, I'll get to that later, and there's a reason I'm postponing it. I want to say to you, because I think you know this so very well because of your past experience of stewardship. First of all, it isn't about what size parish we have. Because if it was about size, again, Jesus would have said, "I know there's only a few of you, so let's wait and see how many more people we can get before you carry on my mission." He sent what he had, and here we are today, part of a universal church, carrying on the mission of discipleship. So sometimes I kind of use those words interchangeably I won't say carelessly, but I keep thinking about every time you start to wander back into the stewardship financial responsibilities of a church, drift back into discipleship, and that kind of brings us back into focus on what we are about. So our parish has been trying to advance stewardship as a way of life for the last 10 years. We're in our diocese, we're considered about medium size, about 650 families in St. John's. To you, that's fairly large. But to our diocese, it's medium. To the nation, it's very small. But it doesn't matter about what size it is. It's still relevant to no matter what size parish we are. Stewardship is relevant. It's important. It's necessary. And so we came to learn that. And so we are still trying to tell others about the stewardship message in our diocese. I don't know how it is accepted and understood in your diocese. My guess is probably there are some hesitations. There are some parishes or pastors who would be suspicious. There are some who just don't get it. Because that's, I think, common throughout our country. But we do. And I know you do. Why else would you be here? Why else would you take a weekend of your time to come to this place, this wonderful place of hospitality, this place where, yes, we pray and pray very well. We celebrate the sacraments, but you've given some time to come this weekend to talk, to think, to pray about the stewardship way of life. And I congratulate you for that, and I'm inspired by that. So I'm grateful to be here. It is warmer here than back home, but that's beside the point. It's warmer, and it's more welcoming in that because stewardship is filling us, and this room, and this place. And that's the beginning of this thing. So I'll have to tell you, I had, for a number of months, I had prepared my conferences, and that, as I always do, when I'm going to introduce stewardship to a parish. And then I got a call from Father Kelly this week. This week. I think it was Monday we spoke, or Tuesday. And he told me, oh, we've been at this for 17 years. And he didn't see or hear, but I fell on the floor. I thought, okay, they know. They know. I don't need to introduce this. I don't need to introduce. They know. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Well, you know, then I did what I normally do when I get a little bit confused or a little panicky. I went and sat in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And I said, you want me to be your messenger. Tell me what to do now. and over a period of time and meditation, I think the message was sort of clear. Just tell the story, Dave. Father Dave, just tell the story. Because the story continues to inspire even people who've been living it and encourage people to tell their story. Stewardship is a wonderful, blessed idea, but it's a collection of stories. A story like the story at the homily, Cole. That's really part of a stewardship story. His love for the Eucharist, that's stewardship. As Monsignor Magritte from Wichita used to say, the textbook for Catholic stewardship, he'd hold up the Bible. You've seen it many times, haven't you? He'd hold up the Bible. He says, this is your textbook, and your classroom is the Holy Mass. And I always fall back to that because we learn about what God is calling us to be through our lessons and our scriptures. We learn about it and how to be through our celebration and appreciation of the Holy Eucharist, the Mass. Think about all that happens around this table. Think about all that happens around your own table at home. The early Christian communities, as we said, their table was the place where they gathered quietly, secretly, to celebrate the Eucharist. We do the same thing. So the stewardship stories that we have and that we treasure are very personal. But they're never intended to be private. So maybe this weekend, our weekend is about stories. The stories of stewardship. They're personal, but they've never been intended to be private. Think about the blessings God has given you. Are they meant to be private revelations that you don't tell anybody about? There comes a moment in all of our lives when the story of our lives and the story of God's blessings and gifts to us needs to be told and shared with others. That's how people learn about stewardship. When Monsignor Magritte spoke about the Bible being the textbook of stewardship, it's a collection of a beautiful, inspired stories of how people's lives were changed, of how people came to live the life that God was calling them to live. And there's all kinds of interesting stories in there. And they're very, very fascinating stewardship stories. But I can imagine, because you are here this weekend, your stories are just as fascinating. So in that little packet, which you don't open yet, there are a few stories that will be. I'll read to you, I'll talk to you about. They may seem somewhat extraordinary, But they could be anybody's story. They could be your story. They could be my story. But there are stories that can inspire us, inform us, make us more aware of what stewardship is doing and is active in the world today. I believe, as I said, some people who don't get it are not aware that these stories are stewardship stories. They're not aware that the stories of your life and my life as a believer, as a disciple of Jesus Christ, are stewardship stories. But I'm hoping through the weekend and through some of these discussions, they become more aware to each and every one of us. And my prayer for all of you is that that your stories become more important to you. That your stories, your own reflections about the way you live your life, your call to live your life as a disciple of Jesus Christ, becomes your stewardship story. So that's why the title of the conference, which I didn't have for a while, I've called it, you know, stewardship stories. The stories of stewardship. It's personal, but not private. So there are some things that we'll be talking about this weekend that will be very personal. As you even heard, I got a little bit emotional, which kind of surprised me when I was telling you the story about Cole. But to be honest with you, I can still see the look on that young man's face as it turned flush. And at first, his eyes were almost like they were on fire. And I thought, he's getting angry. No, he was getting passionate about his love for the Eucharist. And I can still see that. You know, I can still see the tear that came down. I imagine his classmates did the same thing, and you could hear a pin drop in that room. But to have us see him this past week and for him to still remember that, it's a stewardship story. It changed his life. So a lot of stewardship stories really begin with conversion. And on the front of that little envelope that you have there, you see a picture of one of the greatest stories of conversion, the Apostle Paul. Fell off his horse, blinded by a light, listened to a voice, was taken to a home. The home was opened up to him. He listened with an open house to Christians, probably for the first time in his life, and he was converted. It's a stewardship story. We're going to talk more about that story tomorrow. But the stories in the scriptures are blatantly stewardship. It's not hard to recognize that the more you look into them and read them. But then, so are your stories and my stories. The story of Cole and his love for the Eucharist. The story of a pastor who for 18 years did not believe that stewardship was about his call to being a disciple of Jesus Christ. Who believed that stewardship is a fundraising tactic, and when I need to raise money, I'll talk about it. For 18 years, that's what I believed. Then on March 1st of 2005, I traveled to Wichita. Actually, because it was warmer than Minot. But I traveled there to attend a stewardship conference. And I listened to Monsignor Thomas Magreed, who they fondly call the father of Catholic stewardship, speak from the heart about understanding stewardship as a way of life. Not a program, but as a way of life. And the first thought that came to my mind is still very clear. Well, this is something new. I had no idea how new it would be. And then I realized, this isn't new at all. It's just that I'm beginning to listen. I'm listening to something that has always been there. And I was converted. So I like to say to people, I was born and raised a Catholic, but I'm a convert. And they look at me. I says, I'm a convert to stewardship as a way of life. And they still look at me and wonder, what is this guy talking about? But once they understand in their own lives their call to live stewardship as a way of life, they understand. I think you understand. You've been doing it. So I said that we've been practicing stewardship for 10 years. I'm not so sure that's as accurate as it should be. When I think back at the history of our parish, perhaps exactly like the history of yours, when you think back at how it began, how it was established, That's when our stewardship story began. It was in 1961, and St. John the Apostle was not in existence at that time. And a group of people were moving into the area, and they decided, we need a parish here where we can feel welcome to our community, we can pray together, we can learn about our faith, and we can serve God. So they petitioned the bishop, and he said, okay. And St. John the Apostle Church was formed, was established. For 2 years, they met in a public school gymnasium, setting up the gymnasium with folding chairs, an altar, you know, everything that they needed so that every weekend they could gather together to celebrate the Eucharist. 2 years they did that. 2 years. That's when their stewardship story began. And I bet yours is exactly like that. People wanting a place to pray together, a place where they feel welcome and being a community, a place where they can learn about their faith, a place where they can serve God. And so parishes are formed, and so stewardship stories begin, I really think, there. But there comes a moment in everyone's history, in every family's history, where you move to a new place in your heart and in the family. Where you kind of kick it up a notch, to coin almost a cliche now. And 10 years ago, that was for us. Maybe 17 years ago, maybe that's what your parish did as well. But it brings a new conversion to the community. Not just the pastor, but the pastor is a key player. So I returned from Wichita, all excited about stewardship, and I realized, this is what was important for our parish. So I called an emergency parish council meeting. Everybody came because they thought there was some big news about to be sprung on them. And there was, but they didn't get it at first. In fact, one of the parishioners said, "Are we having financial problems? I just knew it. We're having financial problems." So now he's talking about stewardship. And I realized we need to spend quite a bit of time educating ourselves, to learn and embrace what the true meaning is. And we did. It wasn't always easy. But we are where we are because we took the initiative and the steps to do so. So really, probably that's all you probably need about our story, because I don't think it's all that different than yours, even though I don't know much about your parish yet. But your stewardship stories include many personal stories that need to be told, need to be cherished, need to be treasured. And so in this retreat experience, I think it's going to be good for us to be able to spend some time reflecting prayerfully on your own experiences, your experiences of the Cole Krugers of your life, of the parishioners that have sometimes said to you, "It's my stewardship that has changed my life." People who have you, who maybe in your own family, that recognize this whole spirituality of Catholic stewardship is a way for a practical, understandable way for us to be that disciple we are called to be. You know, it's okay to acknowledge it in that way. For one thing, it's the best way to eliminate people's belief that it's a program, or that it's about fundraising. Jesus did not say to his disciple, "Here's the collection basket, go out and see how much you can get." He said, "Here is the message of your life and the life that everyone is called to live. Go out and share it." That's us, faithful stewards of that understanding, that gift that is given to us. And size of a parish has nothing to do with it. When my first assignment as a pastor was to a small parish with 125 families, and had a mission parish of 40 families. To this day, I probably would say St. Mary Queen of Peace in Elmont, North Dakota, 40 families, probably was the strongest stewardship parish I know. And it probably still is. I hope it is. Someday I'm going to need to understand that a little bit more, but I think it was already in place for them. their giving of themselves and their coming together. They were able to, everyone was welcome there. Everyone prayed there. Everyone that you can possibly think of would come that belonged to that parish. They were committed to it. And they had their own formation programs. It wasn't extravagant. They didn't have fancy things to use, but they were committed to learning their faith. And they served each other, and they served the wider community when they could. This was a stewardship parish. Did they call themselves that at that time? No. But were they a parish that lived the message and the spirituality of stewardship? Absolutely. So there are many, many stewardship stories out there. So right now, I want to say just a couple things briefly about what I believe, have come to believe over time, that stewardship is personally. Not because I wear a collar or that I am a Catholic, but because I am a Christian and I am a passionate about being a disciple of Jesus Christ. I believe that's my vocation, your vocation. And Pope Francis recently said, regarding vocation, he said, it is a call from God to your heart, to your heart. Whether you are waiting for it consciously or unconsciously, Pope Francis said that. I believe that's where stewardship really is felt initially. And believe me, that's very personal. It's very personal. It's so personal. It's so beautiful. It's so inspiring that I just got to tell someone about it. It's not private. So that concept of what Pope Francis has said to us, years ago when I first entered the seminary, I went to a 60th wedding anniversary of my cousins, Wally and Florence, and they're now long gone. But they had this big celebration, and I was kind of an oddity to the family because no one had ever entered the seminary. Maybe a curiosity is better name for it. But I went to the party that they had, and Wally was kind of standing there with a dazed look on his face, and Florence was running around and having a great time with everybody, and she came up and she put her arms around me and she says, "Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. What's it like to be called by God?" And I was kind of taken back by that, a family member asking me that. So I said, "It's like a nervous breakdown." So I laughed, and she didn't. She didn't. And then Wally came up and stood by, right next to her. And then it suddenly dawned on me, you know what, Florence? You know what, Wally? You tell me what it was like for you to recognize the relationship that you have with each other was just beginning, and it was something beautiful, maybe even something holy. You tell me what it was like for the two of you to recognize that maybe God was blessing you at that moment with your relationship with each other. You tell me what it was like when you both decided we want to give our lives to each other as husband and wife. You tell me what it was like on your wedding day when you made that formal commitment to love and honor each other for the rest of your lives, in sickness and in health, in good times and in bad. You tell me what it was like to be called by God. And they said, you know what? It was wonderful. It was frightening. It was challenging. It was confusing. I says, okay, now you know what it was like and is like for me, and probably everybody else in this room. Our vocation is a vocation to discipleship. Discipleship is what we are, but stewardship is the way we express it in all of our arenas. So in many ways, what we are talking about this weekend is not just a wonderful expression of our faith called stewardship. It's about our vocation. It's about God's call, God calling us and touching our hearts. And so we recall the stories of our own lives, but let's begin now with a prayer. after all of that, a special prayer that some of you may be familiar with, a prayer that I believe leads us into really understanding true, authentic stewardship. O great God of glory, my Lord Jesus Christ, I entreat you, put light into the darkness of my mind, give me right faith, firm hope, and perfect charity. Help me learn to know you, Lord, so well, that in all things I may do everything this day in keeping with your holy will. That's a prayer that I wish I had written. But it's a prayer that I hope and pray to live by. It was written in the autumn of 1205. Sisters, do you know this prayer? It was written by a man that most of us have heard of, St. Francis of Assisi. And this prayer is attributed to his expression of his faith at a time when he was wanting to know what God was calling him to do. And it was the cross of San Damiano, this cross over here, that he placed himself in front of, begging and pleading for his great and glorious God to entreat him, to give to him a light in the darkness of his own mind, so that he knew how to live his life as a faithful steward. Now, that's a little bit different than what he actually said. Did Francis of Assisi ever call himself a faithful steward? I don't know if he did or not. I'd like to find out. But I believe he truly was one. And why? Because what was going on when he said this prayer? What goes on even within us? This could be our prayer. This should be our prayer. You know, look at what he asked for, and then let us seek it for ourselves as a way to really enter into this retreat. He asked to be enlightened. He's asking for a new vision. In our understanding of stewardship, it always seems to always begin with a change of heart, a change of mind, a change of our actions, a change of our lives, a conversion. So don't we ask for that? And it's kind of an ongoing quest for us. You know, he wants to be enlightened, to have a new vision, and surely we too consistently need a new vision of ourselves as Christians. We need a new vision, a faithful vision, a truthful vision of our church, where we are part of its life and its mission as active players, not just as passive spectators. So Francis was at the foot of a cross, wondering what he should do next. He very, very clearly heard in his heart his vocation. What he heard was the words, "Francis, I want you to rebuild my church because it needs it. Rebuild my church." He took that literally. And he started rebuilding the church stone by stone. He probably thought that God was calling him to be a construction engineer. But then he realized it's not about the stones. It's about the spirituality that God was calling him to be a messenger of. You know, our stewardship is about the spirituality of our lives. And sometimes the call, the challenge for a new vision, a faithful vision, a vision to our tradition, our history, our truths. So he asked for that vision to be enlightened, as he says. He asks for right faith. That's an interesting concept. Right faith. How well do we know the Catholic faith in our lives? How well do we know it? How well do we trust it? I think that's a fair question in today's world. We need to trust it. We need to trust the correct teaching of the faith. When I hear half-truths, and I hear them all the time because people are proclaiming them, when I hear those half-truths and the misconceptions of many who were born and bred Catholics, I wonder how they remain practicing at all. And Francis's message of right faith becomes clear. that we need to seek that. We need to be passionate about that. And I certainly wouldn't have joined the Catholic Church if that's the only truths I would have heard. I can honestly say that. We need to become learners. We need to be disciples. We are disciples, but we need to become those learners of what that really means. Stewardship allows us to do that. He asks for firm hope. How do we view the future? Are we hopeful? It's sometimes hard when you watch the news. It's sometimes hard when you read, you know, a Catholic magazine, and it's filled with scandalous stories because of the issues we're dealing with as a church. But we cannot lose hope. That reading today, that first reading, was so inspiring. It was so much a stewardship reading because, first of all, it assured one basic thing. God is going to stay with us. He's not going to abandon us. He's going to be right there with us, even on the cross. But they say, don't lose heart. The call to our vocation as a disciple in the heart is strong and it's faithful. It's where God speaks to us. So be hopeful. God is asking us to keep that hope alive, especially to those who have lost it. You and I all know people that struggle with hope because of illness, because of depression, because of discouragement. We need to be messengers of hope. That's where stewardship kicks in and brings that hope to other people. He asks for perfect charity. Okay, before you start thinking he asks for more money in the collection basket, Father Kelly, I'm sorry about that comment, because we all do look for that, admittedly. But perfect charity is a much greater thing than just the offertory that we collect. And that offertory is a beautiful thing. It comes from people. Some people sacrifice to put money there. But there are some people who sacrifice a great deal of time as well to make themselves available to other people. To sometimes just be hospitable is a great gift. That charity of one giving of themselves to someone else is something we need to look for and to seek, just like Francis did. Where did it take Francis? It took him to the poor. It took him to the lepers, the very people that he never wanted to have anything to do with. And what did he find within those people? He found Christ. He found perfect charity. That's our stewardship stories. It is about the charity we are able to give of our time and the gifts that we have that we give to others. So perhaps this prayer is a beginning for us, just as it was for St. Francis. Perhaps this is our stewardship prayer for this weekend. Perhaps this is something that we need to continue to explore, to embrace, most importantly, to live. So we not need to just pray it one time. It's the prayer that Francis wrote. Actually, we don't have a great deal of prayers that he wrote. We have some, but this one is very clearly his, and it should be very clearly ours. So what are we going to do here this weekend? We're going to personalize what we've been called to do. We're going to personalize it, but I'm hoping that it's something that you will share with each other on the ride home or while you are here, while husbands and wives are wondering what to say to each other next. You know, maybe you can talk about the gift that you are to each other, that your life together is a stewardship action. You know, the stewardship stories that we tell and that we embrace are definitely inspiring. One of the stories that's in your little folder there, I'm going to read to you now. It is a story that I found back in 2012. And at first, I wasn't aware of it, and I got a phone call from a classmate of mine in Rapid City, Father Gary Orshosky, and he says, I just read a story in our diocesan newspaper, And he says, I think you will find it interesting. And it's a story written by a young Catholic woman named Christina Capecci. She lives in St. Paul, Minnesota. She writes an article for about 50 different diocesan newspapers throughout the country called 20-something. And as a young Catholic woman, she is a beautiful Catholic writer who shares her faith through her gift and talent of writing. So in March of 2012, she was given an assignment to write a story about a couple in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. And this particular couple made national news because they were the only American couple on a cruise ship that capsized in Italy and were still missing. And their name is Barb and Jerry Heil. She wrote the article on March 15, 2012, and it was called Missing Catholics Still Inspire. So I called Christina and I said, this is an absolutely astounding story, and I would like to use it. I said, do you have a problem? She says, no, I have no problem at all. She says, because what I learned from Barb and Jerry, even in their missing, is something that I need to share. It was a very personal experience for Christina to explore and learn about this couple, but then to share it. It's exactly what I'm talking about. It's a perfect stewardship story. So I'd like to read it to you right now. She wrote, this month we mark the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. This was in March of 2012. And the luxury liner buried 2.5 miles below the Atlantic bobs to the surface once again. But I keep circling back to the shipwreck of 2012, the cruise liner Costa Concordia that struck a reef off the Italian island Giglio one Friday night in January. Of the 32 casualties, only two Americans remain missing. A retired couple from Minnesota, Barb Heil, age 70, and her husband, Jerry, 69, parents of four and devout Catholics. They had waited their whole lives to take a cruise like this one, having paid for years of Catholic school tuition and then medical bills from a bout with cancer. Finally, their chance had come. Time to see the Vatican City and Tuscany rolling hills. 4 days after the shipwreck, a reporting assignment brought me, Christina, to Barb and Jerry's parish, St. Pius X in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, 1.5 miles from their Blue Ranch-style home. Their fingerprints in the parish were everywhere. As I pulled up to the church, the maintenance guy, Randy, was changing the marquee sign on the front lawn, removing the words school book fair and loading the message, Barb and Jerry prayer service. In the front entrance, I passed boxes of raffle tickets for the parish festival 3 weeks away. I looked, and Barb and Jerry's envelope was not there. They must have retrieved it before leaving on their trip. A little further in, there were sign-up sheets for volunteer positions that were taped on a table. On the second sheet, Barb had written her name in loopy cursive, committing to a kitchen duty to be fulfilled Sunday, February 12th, serving hot dogs from 10:45 to 1:45 p.m. The small Eucharistic chapel, Adoration Chapel, tucked behind the sacristy, was occupied by four parishioners. Jerry and Barb attended daily Mass and weekly Adoration, and now that chapel was being filled in their honor. I flipped through the register, a three-ring binder marked with arrivals and departures at every hour, overlapping 5 or 10 minutes. Outside the chapel door, a turquoise Mead notebook held petitions for Barb and Jerry, scrawled in black ink. Peace, someone wrote. Closure for their family was another entry. One of the parishioners in Adoration was Dennis Bichelle, 71, who belonged to the same Knights of Columbus Council that Jerry had served on. It's a shock, Dennis told me. You become almost like a second family when you're involved in a church community like this. I learned that Jerry had taught adult faith formation. He volunteered to do that and had helped set up the church's first website. Barb, meanwhile, was an active volunteer at the Dorothy Day Homeless Shelter. 1 month later, Christina wrote, I was back at St. Pius attending the memorial mass for Barb and Jerry. We sang, Be Not Afraid. And during his homily, the priest addressed the scenario playing out in all of our minds. He gave us the words we want to believe. I can imagine, he said, them, Barb and Jerry, very calmly allowing others to get ahead, not pushing others, probably figuring it was going to be okay. Surely, he said, Barb and Jerry were praying as they waited their turn. Then Christina wrote, when I reviewed all my reporting notes, it was hard to find anything unrelated to Catholicism. As a 20-something imagining what the rest of my life will look like, that inspired me. For me, that's the takeaway. That's the testimony, to be so wholly Catholic that there is nothing outside your faith, nothing untouched, nothing walled off, nothing is hidden. It's where you begin and where you end and where you dwell all day. It's not showy, it's not overly pious, it's just who you are, Catholic through and through. It's a stewardship story. But you notice what it didn't say? It didn't say what they put in the collection basket. But if this couple were that committed to their Catholic faith, living it in a very, very, really ordinary way, ways that you and I live our faith, even serving hot dogs to people who come to your parish, you know, if they lived it that way, I can guarantee they probably were very generous in supporting their parish with their treasure as well. And I have a feeling that Christina, who found their lives and it was shared with them, who now shares it with so many others, maybe is doing just as much. She said, I was inspired by it. You know, when I talked to Christina, I says, you know, I want to thank you for sharing with me two very faithful stewards of the gifts that God had given to them. She understood that. But I also said, and I also discovered another one, a 20-something young Catholic who is willing to take the talent that she has and share her faith with so many other people. She has a stewardship story. Barb and Jerry has a stewardship story. This story was published, and my reflection on it was published on a Catholic blog on stewardship. And I got an email from Barb and Jerry's kids who thanked me for sharing the story that inspired them to be the Catholics that they are today. You see how this works? It's personal, but never intended to be private. This is their story. What's yours? That's what we're going to explore this weekend. That's what we're going to celebrate this weekend. That's what we're going to cherish this weekend. And that is certainly what is going to continue to inspire us to live stewardship as a way of life in your parish, in mine, and in other parishes around our country. The stories need to be told. It's your turn. In the packet, you will find some of these stories that we'll be using this weekend. That's what's in there. So you can look them over. In the story about Barb and Jerry, that this is in there for you. You know, it's a wonderful story, and it's a story that I think can inspire us and make us realize our names could have been on that sign. Our names should be on that sign. Because our call to be stewards is a call to every single one of us. Because it's not a call from out there, it's a call from, as Pope Francis says, right here in our hearts. It changes us. It makes us live discipleship in a profound way. Whether we're way up north or down here in the south, whether we have a parish of 5,000 families, which I can't imagine, or we have a parish of 100 families, or 600 families, or 50 families, or even 40 families. our hearts are waiting to hear God's message to us. He proclaims it in the Word of God. He proclaims it in our celebration of the Eucharist. He proclaims it at times when we're sitting in front of the Blessed Sacrament wondering what to do next. It's our stewardship. And what a joy it is, what a pleasure, what a privilege it is to be with a group of people that understand that and celebrate that. So we will continue to thank God for the blessings that has been given to us, to share those blessings and tell our stories. Thank you.